Well, good evening. Oh, that was lame. Sound like you're cold and you just got in and you got comfortable and warm. So we'll try it again. Good evening. Much better. Much better. If it does make you feel warmer, we are focusing on Latin America in our missions conference. Too bad we couldn't bring in a little bit of a Latin American weather. Bob and Lois Walsh, where are you seated right here? Bob told me that when they left Brazil, it was, what, 90 degrees where you were at? Yes. And, Doug and Sharon, you'll stand so everyone can get an eyeball on you. What was the temperature? A 97. Okay. Yeah. All right. And, is Lois Beetle here tonight? She's with the kids tonight. So anyway, she didn't come here from Haiti because she is stateside right now. So she's up in Washington Township area and coming in. So she's used to this. Anyway, I'm so excited to have Bert Spalding introduce and interview dear friend of mine, Eli Garza. Now, many of you know, because if you've been in Detroit for any length of time, that we have a section of Detroit, the southwestern section of Detroit near Michigan, Livernois area, where we consider that to be Mexican town. And there are some good eats down there, some really good restaurants that some of you have sampled. What you may not know is that there is the first Spanish Baptist Church of Detroit that is there. Eli is the pastor there. Eli came to the United States, if I get the story right, I think in the 50s, 40s. Well,
I was born here.
You were born here. Your yeah. Your dad came
My
here.
My dad came in the,
with,
1954. 60
because
years
of the
ago.
Automotive industry.
60 years ago, right.
And you were educated at U of M.
Yes.
We'll forgive you for that.
Thank you.
Well, they're happy about that. Okay, that's another story.
That's okay. Wolverines eat the Spartans, so.
So, well, that's fine. I'm a Buckeye. But anyway. But you were part of that church.
Yes.
All of your life. And later on, you went to Moody Theological Seminary to get an MDiv.
Right.
In order to go back and to be able to serve in the church in which you grew up.
Correct.
That is an exciting thing. And we know that there are some unique challenges that you guys will be able to talk about. But I would like for us to give to Eli a warm cornerstone welcome this evening.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bienvenidos, Pastor.
Gracias.
Gracias. Good evening. Welcome. We're so glad you're here. Pastor Bob has introduced you a little bit, but could you tell us a bit more about your story and even how you came to become a follower of Christ?
Wow. Well, first of all, let me talk a little bit about temperature. When I left Southwest Detroit today, about an hour and a half ago, it was 9 degrees. So it was just a tad warmer than any up here. But Bob is right, and my dad came to Detroit in 1954. That was during the, you might say, the second wave of Latino immigration into the state of Michigan. And back then, of course, Detroit was around 2 million in population, which seems almost incredible today.
Right.
And my dad wanted to work in the auto industry. And like a lot of Mexicans that come to our state, he didn't want to stay here permanently. He wanted to earn money so he could go back and start his own business. Mm-hmm. And he was very technically oriented, so he studied to be a welder. He studied later to be an air conditioning refrigeration technician. So he worked at an auto plant in Livonia for about 25 years. And so he missed his girlfriend, his wife. I mean, later went back to marry her, became his wife. And then I was born here in Detroit in 1956, just 3 blocks from my church. It used to be the old Ziegler Hospital, which later folded into Botsford over in the Farmington area. So that was just three blocks down from where we are now in Livernois in Michigan. And then, because of my parents not wanting to stay here permanently, they wanted me to learn Spanish. My mother was an elementary teacher as well as an assistant principal in Mexico. So she insisted I learn Spanish. Not only at home, but every summer from the time I was 2 until I was 18, I would spend it in Mexico. And I wouldn't just stay in one city. I would go traveling with my cousins. And we didn't go through luxurious travel like a lot of people do to fancy places like Cancun. We would take the bus where you had to hold on. And, you know, sometimes we would have chickens in the back. So I got a real chance to visit and travel through Mexico. And also being here at home, my mom obviously forced me to sit down and read and write right through elementary school Spanish. So that's how I became bilingual. And then about the age of 9, that's when I made my commitment to Christ through Sunday school. And at that, we'll talk a little bit about our church history. At that time, we had a teacher who was Anglo, but he was married to a Mexican lady, and they were attending our church. So he was my teacher, and we were at a picnic in Hines Park over on the west side of the city, and presented the gospel to us. I received it at that moment, placed my faith in Christ. I was baptized later at the age of 12 in 1969 at the church. And, you know, grew up as a teen here, later went off to University of Michigan. I wanted to be a civil structural engineer. So I graduated in 1979, and I worked for a couple of large architecture firms here in Metro Detroit. But I was, because I spoke Spanish, I worked on several projects in Mexico and in Brazil. And at our congregation, because we have also, there are so few evangelical ministries to Latinos in our state, we also had some Brazilian people come. So I was able to learn a little bit of Portuguese from then. So, eu falo um pouquinho, não muito bem. But, and then through the years, I just served in lots of different capacities, Sunday school teacher, Sunday school director, youth leader, you know, deacon. And later I felt called to leave my career. So back in 1999, I was 42. And I just left my career. I didn't retire. I didn't have a golden parachute. And I became downwardly mobile, the every American's dream. And just depended on the Lord. Now, my church couldn't support my salary. And I worked as associate pastor. So I had to raise. And I attended other conferences like yours tonight with our display. And was the idea is to say that Latinos, especially here in the state of Michigan, are largely unreached. We only think at the most 3% of Hispanics are evangelical Christians in the state, which is really tiny compared to Latin America. Countries like Guatemala have 35% rate of Mexico even is higher at 8%, which is still small compared to other countries, but we're really largely an unreached people group. So that's how I felt the Lord calling me to serve, to use my talents in both English and Spanish, to use my professional background in an area that has a lot of need, like the inner city of Detroit, that doesn't get a lot of attention, and especially a spiritual investment, you know. And so I just felt called to leave my career to start working there. And then finally, the church asked me, you know, okay, you're a smart guy, but you should go to seminary. And so I started attending, but I only could go, you know, like one or two classes at a time. It was just taking forever. So in 2008, I decided to resign and just go to school full time and tortured my wife by having her, you know, support us financially. And so I graduated in 2010 with my Master of Divinity degree here from Moody Theological Seminary, Michigan in Plymouth. And during that time, our senior pastor had left, had taken another position. So the church was asking if I could come back. And for us, we were troubled by it, not because the congregation was bad or that the situation was bad, but you know, I had been there since 1962. I started attending when I was 5, and my wife and I thought maybe the church needs some new blood. You know, I'm old, and I'm starting to look like Albert.
Right.
And I decided that, you know, we were just really, really struggling if we should stay. But the Lord laid on our heart that it was necessary for us to stay, and so we did in 2011. Since March, so it's almost 3 years I've been the senior pastor there.
That's wonderful. And you have some members who are here this evening?
Yes.
Could you point them out so we can say hello to them?
Yeah, Mike Cachat, if he could stand. Mike.
Bienvenidos, hermanos.
And Josué Ramírez. Josué is from Colombia. Mike is from the east side of Detroit, but of west side. Yeah, he's on the west side of Detroit, but he's of Iraqi descent. Yeah. So, but we're great. Josue lives right here in Warren, and Mike lives in Sterling Heights. And so we have members basically from the whole metropolitan area, not just the Southwest. We're not really a neighborhood church. We're more of a metropolitan church. Probably about 40% of our congregation comes from outside the city of Detroit.
Tell us a little more about the church itself, its role in the city, and maybe a little bit about its history.
Well, First Spanish started in 1960. It was a mission from the Southern Baptist Convention. Our first pastor, Francisco Lemos, was a professor at Wayne State, also taught Spanish at Garden City High School. He was pastor there for about 7 years. We started off in an old little rundown building that used to be a bar right in the corner of Bagley and 18th Street, right in the heart of Mexican Town. Today it's a parking lot, so there's no memorial there. But we were able to buy property on Livernois, just south of Michigan, which at that time was way outside the Latino neighborhood. But as it turned out, the population grew and expanded. Now we're right in the heart of the community. And we were able to save money, get a loan. Our own members helped build our current structure. And we finished that in 67. Our second pastor, Henry Medina, came from Argentina, and he was born and raised in Granada, Spain. And he led for about 10 years. And then our third pastor served from 1983 until 2009, Carlos Lisi. He was an Anglo that was raised in Peru, so he spoke both languages perfectly without any accents. So he led our church for 25 years, and I served under his leadership before he moved on. And our population, it started out in the first 10 years being completely Spanish-speaking. And following the typical homogenous unit where most people were from the neighborhood, more of the same socioeconomic background, and primarily Mexican. But as the Latino population in the metro area began to diversify, we were getting Puerto Ricans, Caribbean people, South Americans, Central Americans, so did our church. And also, unlike what many people may think, a lot of immigrant children, regardless of nationality, the second generation learns English very well. And what you might hear on Christian talk radio or secular talk radio that Latinos or other ethnic groups don't want to learn English is totally false. In our neighborhood, our English as second language classes are totally filled. And people are just trying to get in because they know they have to speak English to advance in the country. But what happens is the second generation loses Spanish as their primary heart language, the language that they think, they feel, they make their reasoning, their decisions on. And while parents still think in Spanish, but maybe, you know, learn English well enough to do well at work, the children then start thinking completely in English, and Spanish becomes the acquired language. And so in order to reach people exactly where they're at, you have to speak to them in the language that their heart is functioning in. So our congregation, under our second pastor, began to have bilingual services. In fact, the worship we just experienced now is exactly the way we do it. We'll sing a verse in English, another verse in Spanish. And the last two pastors, we have the ability to translate ourselves. So we provide consecutive translation. So we'll start a sentence in English, we'll finish it in English, and then repetimos la misma frase en español, then we repeat the same phrase in Spanish. So if you like ping pong, you'll love being at our church. But that's how our church has developed, and that's why we have that bilingual model today, which is really unusual in the United States. Most churches will have a separate English service and a separate Spanish one. And that's good. That works. But in our congregation, because we're not big, we really couldn't have two different services. We don't have all the talent, and which is something that the Latino churches in the state of Michigan really lack, is a lot of high capacity members, and including our own. And that's why we had to have a combined service. So it worked. I think I heard a lot of you singing. Bob was singing at the top of his lungs there, and he's pronounced it really well. So You can see how it is hooked on phonics, so it's easy. And I think it just takes a little getting used to, but that's how we worship as well.
So you think that this group is ready to lead the singing on Sunday when we sing?
Yes, right? Yes, yeah, come on over.
Well, we're going to try to do it here too. So. You mentioned the Latino population,
yes,
in Detroit, and what's going on with that population? So much of we hear about Detroit, everybody's leaving Detroit.
Right.
African Americans are leaving,
right.
Whites, Anglos are leaving. What's going on with the Latino population?
Wow. You know, I was thinking of that on the way here. I had to go to church first before coming here, and it took me over an hour, and because 94 was so congested, I had to come up Gratiot. And I haven't been up on the east side very often. And I was just thinking, wow, if you were coming in from the suburbs into Detroit and you came down Gratiot, what a different... just a whole different feel for the city than if you were come from the west side and enter into southwest Detroit. Southwest Detroit, like northwest parts of the city, maybe here in the east side, like east English Village area,
yeah,
you know, near Harper, or Mac, I mean, near the border with the Grosse Pointe. We're in one of the few viable areas of the city. You don't see vast streets that are empty, the houses that are totally burnt out. Yeah, there's a little bit of that blight there, but it's not as devastated as large swaths of the east side of the city. And Latinos, in fact, have been keeping Detroit's population stable. Our the two zip codes that our church neighborhood serves, 48209, 48210, have shown a consistent, stable population base. We're one of the few areas in the whole city of Detroit that hasn't lost thousands of people. And that's partly because we're like an entrance. We're a gateway to immigrants. Even way back in the 1930s, 40s, Irish, Ukrainians, Czechs, Slovaks, Slovenes, other people from former Yugoslavia, Romanians. We still have Russian Orthodox and Ukrainian Orthodox congregations in our neighborhood, although the people commute maybe 30, 40 miles into the city. But that neighborhood used to be Eastern European, a lot of Polish people, etc. So it's always been an immigrant entry point, you know, the last 80, 90 years. So it's always had a very stable population. Latinos, though, have not been coming to Detroit in large numbers like you see in other major cities. So if you go to Chicago, there's over 2 million Latinos in metropolitan Chicago, including Indiana. But in Detroit, we only have like 174,000. So we're not even at 10% of Chicago's attraction. And there's a lot of reasons why that, you know, I don't want to bore you and make this a university lecture, but
I'm there.
You're bored. Okay.
No. I'm all for it. Lecture
yeah,
on.
Sorry. See, I saw when his eyes were closing. I said,
no,
okay,
no.
This is not going well. All right. Part of the reason is that Chicago, for some reason, got a critical mass, and they have a whole, it's almost like its own Latin American city. You can go on the south side of Chicago, you don't have to speak English at all. They have two television stations that are full service, like you would see here on Channel 2 or 4. They have like about six FM stations that are just as powerful or professionally led, like 100.3 or something like that. So when you have this big critical mass of culture, people would rather go live there where they can speak their language longer, where they're around people who are more like themselves. And Detroit, we're kind of out in the hinterland. Mm-hmm. And so that's why our population's been small. But starting in the 40s and 50s, after the post-war boom here in Detroit, a lot of Latinos started coming to live, to work in the auto plants like my parents. And then in the 90s, the city was just booming. The whole state was booming just before it started going down, you know, after 2001. And that brought in a large wave as well. So, like, I would say Detroit today has about 48,000 Latinos, and about 97,000 live in Wayne County, so it's almost 100,000 in Wayne County. Macomb County has about 20,000. Oakland County has about 45,000. And then I don't remember the quantities in Washtenaw or Livingston, which are part of our area. But all that adds up to about 174,000. And in this area here, Macomb County, you have a growing population along Van Dyke Corridor from Utica all the way up to Romeo over to the east, to Armada. In this area of the county, in Clinton Township, Mount Clemens and Harrison Township. And none of these areas have an evangelical witness. So maybe just one or two tiny little congregations. But essentially, you have an unreached people group. As your worship leader was praying, just as you have unreached Middle Easterners here in Macomb County, you also have unreached Latinos. In fact, it's so unreached that Metro Detroit or the whole state of Michigan, where it's independent country, we'd be having all sorts of missionaries here working hard to win them to Christ, just like you do in Latin America. But because Michigan is off the radar, even for our own country, and even Metro Detroit, for a lot of Christians, is considered, you know, hopeless beyond help. You know, like what L. Brooks Patterson said just this week, you know, we should just be closed off. And it's so tragic because God has his people there, and it's our responsibility to go and present the gospel to those people that the Lord has already has for us to be reaching. And if we truly are faithful followers of the Lord, we're not going to let human standards get in our way to presenting the gospel, even in areas that seem that are very, very difficult or despicable. In fact, isn't that where the gospel needs to be the most?
Mm-hmm. Pastor Garza, the reason that I'm interviewing you, yes, is because I'm a member of the congregation, and we as members of the congregation, we need to know, we need to learn what we need to know in order to witness effectively, right, to Latinos.
Right.
And so can you give us some coaching on that little bit?
Well, first of all, it's very, very easy, yeah, because most Latinos are very friendly and they want to talk to you. They want to have a friendship with you. If anything, we're highly relational. And that's the, in fact, the majority of Latinos are Roman Catholics, so they have at least a Christian worldview, which is what you won't encounter with some Middle Easterners who come from a Muslim background, who definitely have a very different worldview than us. But Latinos definitely have a Christian, in a sense, general Christian worldview, so it's easy to build bridges. Obviously, the Bible is accepted as infallible, the inerrant Word of God, so that makes it very easy to present the gospel. And then also, they still are holding on to traditional values. They haven't morphed as rapidly as the English speaking, or as our Canadian neighbors call us, the Anglophone world.
Right.
Right. The Hispanophone world hasn't adopted that quickly yet. So a lot of the social mores and the moral perspectives. Mm-hmm. So to build bridges is very, very easy. Now, the thing is, the majority of Latinos here in the state of Michigan are Mexican. And unlike you might hear on television when people compare Latinos to African Americans, we're not really this big monolith. There's 20 nations that are represented among Latinos. Even with Arabs, there's 20 different nations as well. So each country is different. It's not like crossing the border between the United States and Canada. The differences are much greater. We just had three baptisms a couple weeks ago. It was a couple from the Dominican Republic and a young man from Mexico. And if you would hear them talk, the difference in Spanish accent would be the same as you'd have a couple from Scotland, Edinburgh, being baptized with somebody from Atlanta. So, and even the culture, the way of talking, speaking is that dramatically different, even though they're relatively close by nations. So each group has their own characteristics, their own style. Definitely not everybody eats tacos. Tacos usually end as you go south from Mexico. By the time you get to El Salvador, when you get to Costa Rica, they don't eat tacos. I remember we were on a mission trip to Panama, and we said, wow, there's no Mexican food here. They had no idea. So all they had was white rice.
Yeah.
So, you know, every country's there. Colombia, you know, obviously Brazil speaks Portuguese, very different. And by the way, there's a large amount of Brazilians in Metro Detroit. They live in two areas. One is in the Ann Arbor area. The other one's here in Sterling Heights, Macomb Township area. And there's no gospel witness to either section of the city or in the whole state to people who speak Portuguese. And again, an unreached people group right here. And it's that's something that we need to become aware of, that right in our own state, in our own city, there's groups that haven't been touched yet with the gospel. But anyway, going back, so relating with people is easy, being friendly, talking. Now, the largest, like I said, the largest ethnic group of Latinos in Michigan are Mexicans. And they tend to come from a region of Mexico, the southwestern part of the country. States like Jalisco, Michoacán, Guerrero, Morelos, Guanajuato. And these states are very, very, very traditional. In fact, if you would go to those states, you would see Catholicism practiced a lot like before, or like in Europe before Luther. It's very medieval. Very much a salvation by works, even though Catholic doctrine officially is salvation by faith plus works. The way it's practiced and lived and taught in especially southwestern Mexico, salvation by works. And so it is like going backwards in time, 500-600 years. Also, Mexicans tend to identify much more with Roman Catholicism than the other countries. Primarily because, unlike the United States, where the father of our nation was a wealthy landowner who later became a general, Mexico's father was a priest who was in a cabal, in a conspiracy with other priests and nuns in order to overthrow the Spaniards. And Mexico's first flag wasn't a flag of three bars, you know, red, white, and green. It was the image of the Virgin Mary. So many Mexicans see Catholicism as an ethnic identity, very similar to Jews. You know, look at Judaism. Many Arabs or Malaysians see Islam. It identifies them as a people, not just as a faith. Now, it's not as strong in Puerto Rico, in Colombia, Argentina especially. Uruguay is probably the most secular of the Latin countries, same with Chile. So people don't identify as strongly with the Catholic Church. They're more almost European, but not Mexico. Mexico's very strongly attached. In fact, Pope John Paul II back in 2000 had a big conference of bishops. And the purpose of the conference was, what do we do with these sects, you know, S-E-C-T-S? What do we do with these groups, these cults? And unfortunately, evangelicals in Mexico are thrown into the same classification as Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons or other strange groups. And so with Mexicans, to present the gospel is easy, but to make the step of faith requires a major social change, because so much of daily life is involved in following Catholic ritual and customs that to leave Catholicism, one is, it's not as severe as Muslims or Jews leaving Judaism or Islam, but it's close. They may even lose family and friends, social prestige, because of not becoming, not maintaining their Catholicism. Northern Mexico, it's not like that because it's close to the United States. So the city, my family, Monterrey, has like the largest concentration of evangelicals in the country. But the rest of the country, it's very weak. In fact, the Mexicans themselves call Southwest Mexico the silent zone because there's so few evangelical works in that area. And guess who the majority of Mexican immigrants are to our state? They're from the Southwest section, the silent zone. So it's very difficult not to present the gospel, but to get to the point where they make a decision to follow. But it doesn't mean it's impossible, especially if someone is loving, kind, friendly, wants to know who they are, enjoys the cooking, which I know many of you do, but don't go to Xochimilco's. And then you can go to, you know, you already got the desire and and the passion to do it. Now it's just start being a friend and start leading them to Christ. And one last thing, if I can say, now that you got me on my pulpit.
Yeah. I'll just go sit down over
there. Yeah, please. I'm such a snot. But
that's what my wife
says. Yeah. Especially when I sneeze. But anyway, you can't do this short term. You know, the presenting a quick little gospel track. And, okay, you want to receive Jesus? That's not going to work. It's going to take time. In fact, the couple that we baptized just a couple weeks back, they had been attending our church 3 years before they finally made a commitment to follow Christ. And then just, you know, a few months before they made their commitment to follow the Lord in baptism. So it's a long term, it's slow, it's not instantaneous, but with your consistent affection, friendship, and then little by little presenting them with materials of the gospel. And one last thing, which I'm anticipating a question maybe. There's so much literature in Spanish available to you here in the United States, either through ChristianBook.com or Amazon.com, and no, I don't have stock in them. But they are really easy places to get the materials. Many of the same English books that you like and have used are available in Spanish, and they're very easy to find and purchase.
In fact, when we've been down in other, we have folks here at our church who have been to Dominican Republic and many other countries, and often we will take a book that we're familiar with in English, get the Spanish version, and it gives us something to talk through and, and experience. And of course, bilingual Bibles are relatively available. If someone here was starting to witness to a Latino, would you recommend a particular version of the Bible, the NVI, the Reina Valera, or what?
It's just like in English.
Doesn't matter.
You know, we're not Reina Valera only.
Yeah.
By the way, that was translated way before the King James.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
In fact, the King James translators used the Spanish Bible to check their work. So that's what I always tell the King James only people. Why aren't you reading the Reina Valera? You guys are a little behind by about, 50 years. Mm-hmm. But I don't see that in their church, you know, Reina Valera only. But
very often there's a the NIV.
Yes.
And NVI.
Right, NVI. Nueva Versión Internacional. In fact, I've been introducing that more and more in the church because it's easier to read. In fact, on our midweek services, that's where the version I use for my notes.
Yeah.
When I project the verses on our screen too as well, I'll use both Reina Valera 1960 version. Yeah. To the average person, the Reina Valera sounds awkward. It's not as bad to the Spanish speaker as King James sounds to us in English. The Spanish hasn't morphed as dramatically over 500 years as English has. Like a Spaniard would find the Reina Valera really easy because it's more of the dialect of Spain. But I would have no trouble presenting the gospel through the NVI, as it's called in English, the Nueva Versión Internacional, or using the Dios Habla Hoy, which is the Spanish equivalent of the Good News Bible. I know in English some people have trouble with that, but it in Spanish, the translation is very good. Mm-hmm. In fact, I used to do, when I did my Greek homework in Spanish, I sometimes would check it with the Dios Habla Hoy, just so I could catch that I was doing the dynamic translation as well as the literal one. But those are three good versions.
Okay, so if a person was witnessing to a Latino, a neighbor, a friend, a coworker, and you wanted to try to make it almost as a goal to arrive at a point where you're studying the Bible together, very easy to find NIV, NVI type of combination.
Sure.
And you have the double advantage of really helping them with their English
while
you're learning some Spanish along the way.
Right. And since our services are bilingual, many of our Spanish-speaking members have told me, Pastor, this is so cool because we're learning so much English. Mm-hmm. Because as we see the verses projected, we're learning, we hear you translate back into English, we just said in Spanish. Mm-hmm. So, that'd be a great tool. Mm-hmm. And that would be a great opportunity at lunchtime with the Spanish-speaking worker. Sitting down with them and reading a bilingual Bible like the Spanish NIV, NVI, and you follow along with them. And what an opportunity.
Right. And so as we're reaching out to our Latino, and we say Spanish, Hispanic, Latino.
Tomato, tomato.
Tomato, tomato, Mexican, and our neighbors and friends and co-workers. Discover that they're growing in the Lord or growing in an interest in the Lord.
Right.
Where do they? I mean, if they would not necessarily be comfortable to come to a Cornerstone English only kind of congregation, How many First Spanish Baptist churches are there around that we could have confidence and say, well, here's a good Spanish-speaking church you could go to?
Gosh, that's interesting. You know, I made my own study of how many Latino churches there are in Metro Detroit, and I found there's 41 that I know of. There might be more. The problem is the majority are tiny. They're maybe 50 or less, 100 or less. There's only five Baptist churches in the metro area, one in Ann Arbor and Pontiac, two here in Southwest Detroit, and one in River Rouge. And I'm sorry, there's two in Windsor. So there's seven of us in the region. But, you know, with a population of about 170,000, and we're the largest at 120. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, we got a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. So there's needs for that. Obviously, we'd be happy to welcome them. That's why Josue and Mike, Mike's wife, Elisa, was one of our founding members. But, you know, we welcome our congregation. Like I said, our congregation comes from, you know, not only Wayne County, Oakland, and Macomb. But obviously, it's our desire to plant churches closer to where people are living. Mm-hmm. And maybe the Lord will lead you as a church to consider financially supporting a work as well as with personnel, with your own members providing teaching opportunities to establish a work either in the Mount Clemens area or up in the, like I said, the Utica-Romeo corridor. Because there was a large church nearby that I won't name, was trying to have a Spanish work because there are Spanish-speaking people in this part of the county. And there's so little work and it's so weak. And we're desperate for good, balanced, Bible-believing churches that have good, solid doctrine. Of the seven I mentioned, if we subtract seven from 41, you know, we're left with 34, and the majority are charismatic, Pentecostal. I don't have trouble with that, but unfortunately, the Word of Faith movement, the New Apostolic Reformation, etc., has influenced Latin America so much that it is the dominant form of Pentecostalism, and not only in Latin America, but here in Detroit. So there's a lot of aberrations. I know in Latin America, I think of the evangelicals, 75% are Pentecostal, and probably that 75% is tainted with the Word of Faith because of TBN's Spanish language channel called Enlace, reaches everywhere, even here in the United States. And so there is a need to have healthy, balanced, doctrinally sound churches in our metro area. And we're very, very weak. And your congregation can be one of those tools the Lord uses, even here in Macomb County or other parts of Wayne County that still need a church like the Downriver area in our county.
When I was in one time in Mexico, there was an area that was mostly apartment buildings. And it was an area where one of the local churches was witnessing to and knocking on doors. And on the posts all around the apartment building, there were signs that say, no sectos, no sects.
Yes.
S-E-C-T-S.
Right.
Referring, like
right.
you say, to anything that's not Catholic.
Correct.
And many of the doors, we have, sometimes people have no soliciting signs.
Right.
It was no sectos signs.
Right.
On all the doors.
Right.
And yet, I saw these brothers and sisters, you know, they would knock on the door and they would talk to people, they would go in and they were building relationships and going back and going back and going back, and eventually people would receive Jesus and would become followers of Christ. But every time they went in the house, they walked past that sign. It said, no sectos.
Right.
And it was like, they didn't even know. I almost got the impression that the people there didn't really even know what that meant.
Right.
Because the personal relationship trumps however many
exactly.
signs that you want to put up
correct.
About no sectos.
Correct.
So
yes, you're absolutely right. And that's how you chip away at the barriers people have. It's your affection, your love, and it's a slow process, but it's effective. And in fact, that's how we see it in the New Testament. And because of the culture being highly relational. You know, one more thing if I can add. One of our problems of the Latino community in the whole state of Michigan is that we're really transitory. Like I said, we're so close to Chicago that it hurts us because people would rather be there. Mm-hmm. And so we have sort of a brain drain even in Michigan. As Latinos develop to get better, they move out because they want to live in a better lifestyle. So they go to places like Chicago. North Carolina has been taking people away because the economy is so much better there. In fact, in North Carolina now has a larger population of Latinos than Michigan. And our problem is that we have a highly transitory population. Our church turns over its membership about 80% every 7 to 10 years. So I'm one of the very few left of the original core. And even, like I said, we asked everybody to raise their hands. Everybody's been there, you know, since 2003. You know, so that's the problem. And because of that, as we develop leaders, these people leave. We just lost our youth leader. Christina Martinez graduated from Wayne State.
Yes.
And moved to Texas. A lot more business opportunities there for her. That's what happens a lot of times. We lose a lot of talented young people, and they leave not just Detroit, they leave the whole city. I mean the state. And so we've been blessed that we have some in the second generation that have placed their roots down, and their financial stability helps our church stay strong. That's why I can be a full-time pastor. The majority of these 41 churches, I'd say 99% are bivocational pastors. So I'm one of the very few. So I'm really a minority of a minority of a minority. I mean, really down to infinitesimal, because it's just the state and the condition of our state. And I'm excited being here, not only because I get to see you, but because nobody laughed at that one, right? So I have to use the laugh sign. So the is that this is unknown and it's shocking. I shouldn't be special, okay? That's what my wife says, you're special, but she doesn't mean it nice way. But no, what I mean is that I'm one of these few, all right? I shouldn't be the only one. There's only, like I said, a couple of us, like another pastor down the street has his MDiv as well, bilingual. But we're rare in the state, very, very rare. And that shouldn't be the case. In other states like Illinois, Florida, Texas, much more common. But in our state, that we're not. And that's part of the issue that I would like to bring before you, is that to have a balanced view of missions.
Right.
Obviously, this is fantastic. God's work in Latin America, and I'm all for it. And if can I preach one quick second?
Of course. Okay.
All right. I really believe in a two-pronged approach, because I'm an indirect product of foreign missions. Mm-hmm. Back in the 1920s, Methodist missionaries went to the city of Torreon, Coahuila, and they presented the gospel to this young man named Jose Samarron. And he received Christ in his 20s. You know, little by little, his life changed. He later had 8 children. He took them all to the Methodist church. They all grew in their faith and knowledge. His wife, it took her almost 30 years before she received Christ as Savior. And little by little, they grew, they advanced. He became more and more prosperous, not because he applied Joel Osteen's principles, but because he just became a committed follower of Christ and stopped drinking, dancing, you know, carousing with women, and started investing his money in his family. And of his 8 children, you know, they received Christ. And of his 18 grandchildren, later 16 went off to college as well. 5 of his own children went off to college. Of his 16 grandchildren, 3 of us are in ministry full time. Of his great grandchildren, 2. So, and of those of us who have followed my grandpa in his spiritual footsteps, work here in the United States. Another cousin, Jaime, is a pastor of a Hispanic congregation in Arkansas, and another cousin, the second cousin, is the youth pastor at the first evangelical church ever in Latin America, in Monterrey, Mexico, First Baptist of Monterrey. So how did all that get started? Well, it was through missions, foreign missions. People were giving offerings to missionaries to go to Mexico. And that got the ball rolling 90 years later on the result of that. So obviously I believe in providing funding and supporting works in Latin America. But our own country, for some reason, is neglected. Mm-hmm. And it has to be both. And there shouldn't be a competition. Oh, Latin America versus Michigan. No, it's both. Both are equally needy. Both mm-hmm. need the gospel. And for those of you who aren't called to go to other countries, you can go to Southwest Detroit. You can go to Mount Clemens. That's not far at all.
You have a table here
yes.
in the gathering space. You have a sign up if somebody wants to get your newsletter mm-hmm. on the email. You're on Facebook.
Yes.
And
Twitter now.
And Twitter, okay. and so you know, you study Greek as part of your MDiv, and you
yes.
learned a lot about the word koinonia.
Yes.
Partnership.
Right.
Tell us, besides getting your newsletter and getting your Twitter feed and watching what's going on Facebook, how can we partner
wow.
with you and with the things that the Lord is leading you to mm-hmm. do? How can we as individuals and we as a church, mm-hmm. koinonia, how can we be in partnership
wow.
with you?
Well, let me throw another fancy Greek word.
Okay.
Philoxenon. You know what that means? Loving the stranger, which is the word for hospitality. Mm-hmm. That's a spiritual gift, loving the stranger, hospitality. So there's a lot for us to do. I really loved the prayer of the worship leader. What was his name again?
Nate.
Nate's
going to come up in
Nate
a few minutes
a
and close
job.
Us out with some more, with one more.
He did a great job in his prayer. Yeah. Do you practice hospitality to Middle Easterners? Do you practice mm-hmm. hospitality to Latinos, unreached peoples right here? There's so much we can do. You know what we lack a lot is discipled, like I said, high-capacity people. And right now, another partner church, a pastor friend of Bob and I's, they sent an older couple for the whole month of January, part of February, to do like a winter vacation Bible school in our midweek service. That's just great. So something that our people are not well prepared to do. But they're coming every week, and that's helping our attendance, helping disciple these kids. That's stuff you can do. Maybe you can't do this over an entire year, but you can do it over 1 or 2 months. And the cost is so low because you're only going down 94 a few miles. And you don't have to get on the plane to go somewhere else. You know, we have outreaches during the year in our community. There's community events. And unlike the suburbs, the city desperately wants us. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's school activities. Sometimes social agencies. They want churches to be there. Isn't that amazing? They want us there. They're desperate us to be in Detroit. And you'd say, well, when I go down Gratiot, I don't get friendly faces looking at me. Well, fine. Then come over to Livernois on the west side. They want you.
True.
We want you there. We need you there. And so we have that. There's sometimes we've repaired some of our members' homes because they couldn't afford home insurance. A lady at a church in 2012, the abandoned house next door caught fire, and a church from Brighton responded, and their men came over like about five Saturdays in a row to re-side their house, to repatch the inside that suffered smoke and flame damage from the fire next door. You know, again, getting involved with our youth. Our youth, we just lost a great leader, and they're doing okay, well, because they're learning how to, they're learning how to lead themselves. But, you know, there's an activity. Maybe you can do a conference with us. In the past, we've had a Baptist university from Texas come in March and lead a one-day, all-day Saturday discipling event with some great contemporary music, some good Bible teaching mm-hmm. for everyone, even a project to go out in our neighborhood and serve in some way in our area. So there's lots of different things. We're flexible. We're not in a box. We don't do things in a box. Mm-hmm. And all of this is not high cost. It doesn't require thousands. If anything, I'd rather have people than money. And not that we could always use investments of income, of money, but it's people who win other people to Christ. It's yeah. not throwing money. And so I would rather have a group come and work one-on-one with other people over several weeks instead of just like one, okay, we're going to Detroit for Saturday afternoon. Those are not really very effective in our city. And I know there's been several campaigns like that in Metro Detroit, which are okay. But if we're going to win people to Christ, we need to develop a friendship, and it takes time. And it has to take several weeks. And yes, it's painful. But, you know, we weren't called to be upwardly mobile and comfortable. We were called to be using our money and our time, especially our time. And that's so much more valuable than our money. In maybe sacrificing some Saturdays or Sundays or even midweek on a Thursday night or something to be involved in touching somebody's life. So there's a lot to do.
Pastor Garza, thank you. This has been
very
eye-opening for us, very enlightening for us. It's been delightful to hear your story. It's been it's so important for us to learn more about what's going on and how the Lord is using you and your church and how He can use us as we interact with Latinos. Could I ask you to close us in a prayer, and then we'll ask Nate to come up and maybe lead us in a song. But could I trouble you to pray as you do in your church?
Okay.
In ping pong
sure.
style?
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry. Let's pray. Padre Celestial, nos acercamos esta noche buscando tu sabiduría. Heavenly Father, we approach you this evening looking for your wisdom. Señor, pido que abres nuestros ojos. I ask you to open our eyes. Ilumina nuestras mentes. Enlighten our minds. Mm. Señor, guíanos a ver esta zona metropolitana tan despreciada por todos. And Lord, guide us to look at this metropolitan area that's so despised by so many. Ayúdanos verlo como tú lo ves. Help us to see it as you do. Una ciudad perdida, a city that's lost. Una ciudad abandonada, a city that's abandoned. Una ciudad entregada a los placeres de este mundo, el dinero. A city that's just surrendered to the pleasure of this world. Money, deportes, sports, free time, tiempo libre, comodidad, comfort. Señor, guíanos para ver lo que tú ves. Guide us so that we can see what you see. Tú tienes personas asignadas aquí en esta zona. And Lord, you have people that you've already selected here in this area. Lord, use us as your instruments. Úsanos como tus instrumentos. Lord, move in all of our congregations. Te pido, Señor, que muevas en todas nuestras congregaciones a ser sensibles a tu Espíritu Santo, to be sensitive to your Holy Spirit. Lord, may we see that we need to win and disciple those who are unreached. Ayúdanos a ganar, pero también discipular a los que no han sido alcanzados. Hay tantos en nuestra comunidad. There's so many in our community. Help us to have right sight. Ayúdanos a tener visión clara, justa, correcta. Help us, Father, to cast aside the pressures of this society to despise the city you love so dearly. Y ayúdanos, Señor, poner a un lado la presión que recibimos de despreciar la ciudad que tú tanto quieres. Esto te lo pido, and this I ask you, in the name of Jesus, en el nombre de nuestro Señor Jesucristo. Amén.
Thank you, Pastor Garza.
God bless you. Thank